Here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show on this Forensic Friday, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has the largest selection of natural stone in our area. Call them at 225-9433. Our question of the day, brought to you by United Structural Systems. They are a professional foundation repair and waterproofing company in business for over 20 years. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. Senator Rand Paul says police should be demilitarized. Do you agree? Tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Yesterday's results, will it matter if Allison Lundgren Grimes and Mitch McConnell don't debate before the election? Will it matter? 69% of you said no. 31% said yes. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is in the studio with us, as he is on Friday mornings. Ray, do you think the police should be demilitarized?
Well, from I think Senator Rand Paul from Bowling Green, as a law enforcement expert, is a great ophthalmologist.
In other words, he doesn't know what he's talking about?
I'd say he doesn't know much about what he's talking about in this issue.
All right. Good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
That just got me working here.
Yeah. Well, good. I thought your blood pressure looked like it was that vein sticking out in your neck. All right. We got a long-lost friend of ours on the line with us this morning.
Eddie?
Yeah, Eddie Montgomery. I loved his steakhouse.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We're grounded.
Sorry you lost your butt in that transaction, sir.
Yeah, well, I lost it a long time ago. So.
Well, if you're in this business, if you're in the prosecution business, you may not have lost it, but you got a lot of chomps out of it.
Eddie is the Commonwealth Attorney down in Southern Kentucky.
In Somerset. Do you have three counties, Eddie?
Yes, sir. I do Plassey, Lincoln, and Rockcastle counties.
And of course, the largest population is in Somerset, isn't that right?
Yes, Plaski's the biggest. We have about 60,000+ people here in Plaski.
Now, is there a difference in the kind of crimes that occur in the various counties, or any kind of differences at all?
They're like about the same everywhere. You know, drug fueled, and then leads into burglaries and thefts and all that. Most of it's based on drugs.
We have a doctor that comes in once a month, Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh, who's retired now, but he was an ear, nose, and throat guy down there for his whole career. And, when I see Somerset, I just think Somerset's this beautiful little community close to Lake Cumberland, and I don't think of it as being in any way crime-ridden, but he said drugs down there are really bad.
Yes, we have a huge drug problem, and in all my counties, I think it's throughout anywhere in the state of Kentucky or the country, actually. I mean, we have a huge drug problem. Once upon a time, it was crack cocaine and meth, and now we're getting into heroin. And, of course, prescription pills are, the biggest of all.
Well, he's right. Yeah. I mean, most of the crimes that occur in Lexington are drug-driven.
Let me ask, before we get into the subject, Dave, Eddie, do you think the police need to be demilitarized?
If all the criminals would agree to demilitarize themselves, then I go along with it.
Well, see, that's the whole point.
Right.
I'm very concerned, and I bet Eddie is too. I'm very concerned about what's going on over in Missouri.
Sure.
Because I worry that sort of thing will spread. And we have a detective that's assigned from the Lexington Police Department in our office, and he and I were talking early this morning at the office. I said I'm concerned that police are going to start getting shot at more than they already are, and he says, well, you're not alone on that. And it's what do you think, Eddie?
Well, they get shot at plenty right now, so it's a dangerous job. I think, you know, with any job, people, I tell people all the time, any profession, you're going to have good people and bad people. If the police do something bad, they should be prosecuted like everybody else. But 99% of the cops are out there doing a good job.
And I believe in our system. I know it's not perfect, but I believe basically in our system. And I believe if this cop did something wrong, he'll pay the price for it. But I think a lot of folks in the black community don't believe in our system, and they don't think it's fair.
Well, I mean, you know, I think that's unfortunate.
Well,
but I believe in the system, and I think it is a fair system.
Well, I think we all agree on that. Now, there'll be some people that may call in today that just foaming at the mouth about that. But Eddie, we're talking about this this guy Kevin Higgins.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a little bit about how that, where and how that case came about.
Okay, so it goes back to June 15, 2013. This is in Lincoln County. Had a lady was born in 1921. It was about 10.
Case came about.
Okay, so it goes back to June 15, 2013. This is in Lincoln County. Had a lady was born in 1921. It was about 10:30 at night. She gets a knock on her door. She opens the door, and a gentleman forces her way in and rapes her. So that's where it starts.
He wanted to use her phone. Is that the
plan? Well, that's the pretext. He did what he said it, but he didn't want to use the phone. What he told her. Then he forced her way in and drug her by the hair of her head over to her bed.
So how did tell me about how did it come about that the thing was investigated, and how did she report that, and what did the investigation reveal about this character?
He left the house about 11. She called 911, obviously quite upset, told him, you know, she was bleeding down there. She didn't want to say where. They were trying to figure out what was going on. They get to the house. She didn't want to say what had happened to her over the phone. They get to the house. She told them there'd been a rape. Obviously, they start canvassing the area. Didn't find anything that night. Then this is in a government housing unit, so all these houses are pretty close. Witnesses had said they'd seen a black African-American gentleman outside roaming around her house, her apartment that night. They searched her. He couldn't find anything. The next day at 10:15, a call comes in. A neighbor had... teenage daughter had walked into the bedroom of their apartment and found an African-American male sleeping in the bedroom. They called the police, and he had forced his way into the window. He had a pocket full of jewelry from that house. And then they also found he had some stuff that were stolen from cars from another house next door. So from that, from descriptions, the lady said it was an African-American male had raped her. People had saw him out there who knew him. They called him Little Man. They knew who he was. They got a search warrant and got DNA.
Did they do a rape test on the lady?
Yes, they did a rape kit on the lady that night, obviously. And the next day, they got a search warrant, got his, like I said, his DNA. They sent it to a lab, and we got a hit. They found her DNA on his penis, and they came back as a one person in 16 quintillion as hit on him.
That means it's him.
Is that what you call a slam dunk, Ray?
Well, it's
pretty good.
It's good. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, that's good
stuff. well, the interesting thing, now, when you do, you mentioned a rape kit. When people investigate, who investigated this? The sheriff, state police?
This was the Stanford City Police.
Okay. When they do a rape kit, Jack, what they do is they do swabs. And they do vaginal swab because they're looking for the presence of semen in a rape situation. And then they do pubic hairs and that sort of thing because sometimes these things are left. So when they caught this guy, you got a search warrant, I guess, to do an exam of this guy, right?
We did, yes, sir. They got a search warrant and to get his DNA.
Now, why do you have to have a search warrant for something like that?
Well, obviously, you know, we talked earlier about our system and our Constitution. You just can't go draw people's blood without a reason. You have to have probable cause, and you have to have authority from the judge to do it. And they handled everything properly in this case, and they got the search warrant.
So then what you end up doing is that penal swab that, that Eddie mentioned. And so, you know, this is, you know, I assume they also were able to locate his DNA with the 91-year-old woman.
Well, the real match we had, we found her DNA on his penis. And that's the best way what the lab would say. They couldn't say if it was her blood or what, but they found her DNA on his, on the penal swab on him.
We're going to take a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. 20 after 9. 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, 925. Caldwell attorney Ray Larson in the studio with us. The Honorable Eddie Montgomery is on the line with us from Somerset. Ray?
Eddie, how long did it take for the Stanford Police Department to catch this guy?
Well, it says, you know, the next day he was found in the house, in the lane, and sleeping in the bed of the house he broke into. So they arrested him that day. It was the rape happened at 10:30 on the 15th, and they caught him the next morning at 10:15.
And he had some sort of record, I guess, huh?
He had an extensive criminal history. Starting back 2004, he got his first misdemeanor conviction, a theft unlawful taken, and a DUI. He picked his first felony up in October 2004. He got a year for receiving stolen property. And then he went back on 2006. He got a five-year sentence for receiving stolen property and criminal mischief. And Ray will like this. He got 5 years then. He got paroled in 2007. He got violated. He got paroled again. He got violated in 2007. Then he got released in 2011.
Now, when you say got violated, that explain what that means.
That means on his five-year sentence, he went in, the parole board let him out, and while he was out, he committed some violation of the law or his probation, and then he went back in twice on that five-year sentence. So he got paroled twice and violated twice.
Obviously a parole board success story.
Yeah.
See, everybody knows that I just go skyrocketing on these things. here's a typical repeat offender. And if our legislature would just wake up and our judges would just wake up and put these repeat offenders in, see, this guy would still be in prison.
But wait. It costs too much, Ray. It costs too much.
Yeah, yeah. I call it the cost to incarcerate is what they talk about in Frankfurt.
Right.
I call it the cost to protect our citizens from criminals.
And you've got some statistics to back it up.
Yeah. Eddie, bear with me here.
I'd like to hear it, Ray.
Yeah.
Yeah. This good stuff.
In 2012, the cost of crime, the cost of Part 1 crimes.
And what does that mean, Part 1?
That means the serious crimes.
Yeah.
It doesn't count the all of the misdemeanor crimes. Was the cost of crime in 2012 was $1.5 billion to people in Kentucky. $1.5 billion. The cost that year to keep people in custody, the cost to incarcerate them, was $41 million. That's about 25% of the cost of crime to victims. And it seems to me that our citizens pay a lot of taxes, and one of the top two or three issues for our citizens is public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And the system we got working now is just basically saying, don't worry about it. There are no consequences for crime. And it costs a heck of a lot more in crime than it does to keep these yard birds in, not these defendants in prison. My wife fussed at me.
For calling them yard birds?
No, for she says, you know, Ray, you missed that lesson in kindergarten where you don't call names.
Oh.
And so I promised her I'd do better. Yeah.
But people believe, and perception is reality, people believe what we're told, and that is it costs too much to put somebody in jail, so let's get rid of those that we don't think are going to reoffend. And 80% of them do reoffend, right, or more than that?
Well, 5% commit 60 to 80% of the crime.
Yeah.
So if you just put the 5% in to protect the public from them, you wouldn't have this guy that Eddie's, it's Kevin Higgins' guy, breaking, you know, receiving stolen property means what, Eddie?
Well, obviously he had property in his possession, known it to be stolen.
Yeah, so it's just like your guy, Jack. The guy burglarized Jack's house. That means he's probably tied into a burglary.
All right, we're going to take our break. 253. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us. Guest this morning, Commonwealth Attorney in the southern part of the state, Eddie Montgomery. Eddie, you didn't comment on the rant, the comments that Ray made before the break, because I didn't give you an opportunity to do. What are your thoughts about that whole subject?
Well, I'm kind of on the in with Ray on that. Obviously, if you look at the crime is way down in the United States, the incarceration's up, but crime's down. And I think Ray always makes a great point to point out that people forget that when they mention those things. Most people that commit crimes, or people commit thefts and burglaries, and other ones that they keep letting out of jail, and they're committing most of the crimes. So I'm with Ray on that.
You know, I always liked Eddie.
Yeah, I know you did. Yeah.
Eddie, so tell me, was the 91-year-old woman injured over this?
Yeah, that's, you know, and what's really, I think, fascinating about this, under our statutes, a rape first, which can be a violent, you know, a rape is obviously a crime of violence, is only 10 to 20 years. It's a Class B. Now, if there's serious physical injury or the person's under 12, it can become a Class A, which is 20 to life. In this case, she was injured very badly. She had bleeding. She would have bled to death had she not been treated. They took her to the hospital, immediately had to put her in surgery. Otherwise, she would have died from it. So we were able to get the Class A felony 20 to life by showing that it was serious physical injury.
And this guy went to trial.
He went to trial.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Now tell me about, did you try it in Lincoln County?
We tried it in Lincoln County in May of this year.
Well, tell me about the jury selection process.
Jury selection was, you know, just the normal. It wasn't very hard in this case. We were kind of worried about the publicity on it, but we were able to get through it. The judge brought in some extra jurors, the district court jurors and the circuit court jurors, and that allowed us to, you know, had a jury picked by noontime.
Is that right?
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You got to remember, Jack, this isn't California.
Right, right.
Where they take years.
But now you've got DNA on this guy's penis. What kind of defense is he possibly going to put on?
Well, you got to remember, we had multiple charges here. We had the burglary and the rape on her. We had the burglary we was found in the house sleeping. And we also had thefts. We broke into people's cars next door. So I anticipated his defense might have tried to be, at least on the burglary charges, a voluntary intoxication defense. Regarding the rape charge, that intoxication is not a defense of the rape, but it could be a defense of the burglary charge.
Now, the one time that you had the voluntary intoxication defense that worked was with the man,
right,
Melbourne Mills.
Remember? And I'm going to use it if I ever get in trouble. I just want to let you know that right now, here and now, that is my defense for the rest of my life.
Good. If this is
since it works.
If this is recorded, you know, now that now we'll introduce that against you.
Exactly.
But I tell you, the police had done a good job. They had taken his blood later on in the day, which showed he had no alcohol or drugs in the system. But he did call a witness. Of course, this was several hours later. He called his uncle, which I think he anticipated to say his uncle was having a party and he was drinking on the stand. As I think his uncle, the truth came out, and his uncle said he was at the party, but he wasn't drinking.
Oops.
Which didn't work out too good for them.
Yeah, oops. Yeah. So how long did the trial last?
Trial lasted 2 days, and he at the end of it, he got 3 life sentences.
Now, explain that now.
He got we had him, obviously, the rape first, which is 20 to life. They gave him life on that. For going into her house, that's a burglary first, that's entering her house with intent to commit a crime. Plus, we had him being a persistent felony offender first degree because he had 2 prior felonies. They found him guilty of that. They recommended life on that burglary. And then we had the other burglary where he broke into, and they recommended life on that. And we got him burglary first on that because they found a knife in the bed where he's asleep in that house. They found a knife, which we're able to get burglary first on that, and they gave him life on that. They recommended all those run consecutive for three life sentences consecutive. Unfortunately, under the law, they can't run consecutive, so the judge just had to give him one life sentence.
Why can't they run consecutive?
That's the law. I mean, there's a case several cases that say that they have to run life sentences have to run concurrently, and that's of course based on the fact that the mistaken fact that people that get a life sentence
don't get out
serve a life sentence.
Right. Yeah. But they don't serve a life sentence.
That's exactly right. Now, this guy is eligible for parole in, what, 20 years, Eddie?
This guy will be eligible for parole in 20 years. He's born in 1985, so he'll be eligible before he's 50 years old to get out. Now, that doesn't mean he'll get out. That means he'll come for the parole board. The parole board could flop him and tell him to come back in a couple of months, a couple of years. They could give him a serve out, or, you know, they could parole him at 20.
Well, what is a serve out these days? You know, the only people that I know that can tell you how long a sentence is going to be are the people that are in prison, and they tell you to the minute.
Yes, once upon a time, Ray, I could tell you to the minute too, but it's got so convoluted now with street time, and who knows what a serve out is? If they get parole, they get street time. I don't know what a serve out is.
Now, what does street time mean?
Well, street time, this is what I had a big lawsuit about years ago, is if a guy gets 10 years in Kentucky, if it's not a nonviolent, he's eligible for parole in 2 years, which is 20%. So he gets out in two. Let's say he's walking the street for a year or two, commits any other crime, gets violated. The corrections are going to give him credit towards his sentence for the time he was out walking around the street. So that's what we call street time.
Gee.
There you go, Jack.
So that's what I sued. I had a big lawsuit with them a few years ago about, but that's what we call street time.
Yeah, so that's the mystery stuff that goes on in the sentencing that we all have to, that we all deal with, and it's a little frustrating.
And of course, when you're talking serve out too, Ray, you're talking negative educational credit, good time credit. There's so many credits that go, you know, I can't sit down and tell a victim of a crime what a serve out is. It's impossible to figure out anymore. I can tell them when you can come up for pro, that's about it.
Here's an email that's kind of long, and we may have to respond to it on the other side of the break. But Todd says, with the complexity of law and our legal system, added to the fact that now laws and regulations are increasingly less about public safety and punishment of people who violate the rights of others and more about controlling behavior or generating revenue or supporting an ever-increasing government bureaucracy, is it really fair to say ignorance of the law is not a defense anymore? Lawyers go to school for 8 years to learn the nuances of the law, and if they are honest, I bet even a very practiced legal professional or judge would admit they know maybe 20% of the laws on the books. So when our police and district attorneys can't even know or understand our laws and legal system, is it really fair for the average citizen to be held to a standard of ignorance of the law is not a defense, especially when it is an otherwise law-abiding citizen, like the Pennsylvania woman charged with criminal weapons possession in New Jersey? I'd like the attorneys, the Commonwealth attorneys or police officers' opinion. I'm myself a former sheriff's deputy. What do you say to that, Ray?
Well, let's talk about the thing in Pennsylvania. Most people know that there are different laws in different states, and it seems to me that if I'm going to go to Pennsylvania or I'm going to go to New York City and I'm going to take a gun, I probably ought to see
check
what the law
laws.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, and I don't think that's too much to ask. Now, as far as the ignorance of the law, let me tell you something. Most of us grow up knowing right from wrong. And most of the laws deal with right and wrong. And that's what the laws do. The problem is that when they go to court and they're convicted of doing wrong, then you were raised with the idea, Jack, that if you did something wrong, you suffered some consequences.
Right.
That's the way most people were raised. Well, unfortunately, you get 4, 5, 6 second chances, just like this this guy that Eddie prosecuted, this Kevin Higgins. He got a bunch of chances and just kept on keeping on. So I don't know. What do you think about that ignorance of the law, Eddie?
I mean, I think I'm with 99, 100% of the people I prosecute. They know exactly what they did. Everybody knows you don't break in, you don't steal, you don't do drugs, you don't shoot people. You know, it's not that complicated. And if you're going to carry a gun around, you have to know the laws. Everybody, you know, like you said, there's different laws. I have a concealed carry permit, but I don't take my gun out of the state. If I do, I'm going to know the laws of the state I'm taking my gun into.
Thank you, Eddie. Hey, hang on with that thought. We're going to take a break. 253. It's before 10 o'clock. News Talk 590 WVL. Okay. Eddie Montgomery is our guest along with Ray Larson, and we've got calls. Let's go to Marcia. Thanks for holding, Marcia.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. First off, I taught this kid and had known him since he was a little kid and couldn't believe it, but I'm definitely disgusted with all of this. And then the next capital murder case you all got coming up with a boy from Stanford, taught him too. But
really? You taught both? You
taught them both. Yep.
Really?
Yes. Unfortunately.
How about that?
But didn't see this coming from Kevin. Didn't see it at all. The other one that's coming up, yep, saw that coming. But I can't change some things about people. My question, though, was if I was on a jury and after listening to this show all the time, if I, during the sentencing phase, if I told all these things about, well, you know, if we give them 10 years and it's nonviolent, then they're going to be out in 2 years, or all these little tricks to parole, could this
I know exactly
me in trouble
what you're
and everything?
Yeah,
could
that's such a
all?
Could the, isn't that a great question?
Not,
if the jury
the Senate,
yeah, but if the jury knew what this guy's likely going to actually serve, which they don't.
Yeah,
well, yeah, they
I can,
do.
I can answer that and clear that up real quick for
good.
You. In Kentucky, we have a two-part. You have a guilt phase and sentencing phase, which she talked about. In the sentencing phase, or in Kentucky law, we do have a truth in sentencing. We can bring in, and I always do bring in a probation pro officer to testify about these kind of things. So the jury will know in sentencing pro eligibility that, you know, 10-20%, or in this case, they knew that if he got life, he'd have to serve at least 20, and we do explain to them about pro and the pro process. So once you get to sentencing, they are told that, or they can be told that if the prosecutor chooses to put it on, which I always do.
Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate your call. This is Betty. Good morning, Betty.
Hi. I own a security company and been in business over 20 years, and over the years, you know, I see what the victims are going through. I mean, they're victims. You know, I have customers that are almost hostage in their houses because, you know, they're afraid of these thugs. And Mr. Lawson, I'm sorry for your wife, but you should call them names.
Tell Betty that, will you?
I will.
Well, my name is Betty, and if it's garbage, and it needs to be taken out.
Call it what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, when you have to start hooking up your heating units and even your outside equipment to a security system, and still that doesn't deter, I mean, it might slow them down. But, you know,
Betty, I hate to cut you off, but I am completely out of time, and we thank you for your call. And Eddie, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And tell Dr. Kavanaugh said hi. I know him well.
I'll tell him that. Thanks. Stand
Eddie,
by.
Eddie, I'll see you next week.
Update from the Information Center coming up next.